Welcome to the February 25th, 2020 session of TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been doing a little bit. I haven't gotten the two directories upgraded, but I'll probably get them tonight or tomorrow or something. But I did have a conversation this afternoon with Dolores Knipp, and talked about apparently in April or May, we are getting a research-grade magnetometer installed on one of the university properties here in Columbia. So that'll make it easier for Dave and I to deal with learning about calibration and such. I also asked some questions of her related to how to calibrate magnetometers, and she's going to refer me to the hardware person in her project. So we have a little bit of headway today. So next on the list, we have Dave, KD0EAG. Go ahead, Dave.
Sounds very interesting, Dave. I'd be interested to see how that pans out, what they have to tell us. I haven't been doing as much this week as before because I just got back last night from Dallas, and I've been kind of occupied with a trip to elsewhere land and couldn't really do much. But I do have more boards arriving in a day or two, I think, to work on, build up, and hopefully some stuff to I'll be making progress on those things. I also have an email from Frankie, Francis Bonte, and neither she nor her father are going to be on this session this evening, but evidently they've been making interesting progress. They've also gotten hold of some Arduino related code, not specifically connected to this the needs of this group, but it is nice for general purpose testing, and they have compiled it and apparently it's working. So I'd never been able to I'd started to write some of my own, but it seemed to be dragging me off in other directions, away from what we needed. And also, I couldn't find anything in the open public domain. So that's kind of nice. Evidently, they're working away on things and actually using the extenders that come from SparkFun over a shorter range to test, you know, at least to get it outside of their house. So that's all good. And that's pretty much it for me for now.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and away. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Next, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Thank you very much, Dave. Good to hear from you and the rest of the group. I appreciated Dave Witten's update there. That all sounds really good. I have been very busy working on the HAMSI workshop program. I'm working on it right now, and I'm going to get a draft of that off to our science program committee, and hopefully we'll have the more or less final version of it up on the website by this weekend. It's looking like a really good program, and I'm excited about it. So that's really great. And wonderful to hear about Dolores Knipp and the science-grade magnetometer down at your school. I think that's excellent. W2NAF, back to Nat.
Thank you, Nathaniel. I also did ask her, how did she pronounce it with a silent K or not? And she said she had a grandfather that spelled it with, or pronounced it with just the N, but she's anglified it and pronounces the hard K. So, next on the list, we have Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty. Light, but no sound. Still a light, but no sound. We'll let Scotty figure that out, and we'll get back to him when he's got his sound working. Next on the list is Tom in 5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening. Good evening, and Dave and everyone in the group. Well, it's been a busy week, and it's too bad Scotty's, looks like Scotty's had some issues there. Scotty and I have been real busy with the board layout guy on the receiver, and the board has grown about 15 millimeters or so in length to accommodate some of the circuitry. We had a deep dive in the layout and all the power and ground planes and stuff this morning. So things are going well, and the layout guy's real good. He's real easy to work with, and Scotty's got a real pro there. So back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And now we'll give Scotty 101 a chance to talk. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a different computer set up, and it's not going so well. So now, since I logged in twice, I'm using Windows 101. So got the latest and greatest version of Windows, skipped about, 90 versions. Anyway, like Tom said, we are working on the receiver board. It seems to be coming along pretty well. I'm really happy with the layout. And so our CAD guy is now going to be working on routing it all and getting it all set up the way we talked about today. And we had a telecon with screen sharing and all that, so we could see what the actual layout is going to look like. So certainly by Hamsai, we'll have a definite layout that will be routed and ready to go. And I also talked today, I talked to John Ackerman a bit about the clock module, trying to get the pin out for the connector nailed down. So once we do that, then and he's also going to try placing a few oscillators. And Tom will probably be seeing some of that come by, and trying to get an idea of whether the size is going to be sufficient, or whether we're going to have to make the board bigger, or what we're going to have to do. So, Wednesday, I'm off to Orlando for a new job opportunity, and be remotely working mostly, but I'll spend 3 days over in Orlando to work, but that's okay. So I'm going to have some fun over there. And maybe squeeze in some work on the DE while I'm there, because now that we got the radio board pretty close to nailed down, we better have something to plug it into soon here. So back over to you there, Dave.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Dave, and good evening to you and the net. I have worked only a little bit on the Tangerine software this week because my time was tied up with another university project. However, that's completed and it's been turned into the feds, and so I'm back on this now. I spent about half the day today working on the first block of work for adding the additional channels for configuration and data that Scotty and I talked about. I've got a couple of questions for him once we get to the discussion part. Also, Nathaniel, in case you didn't see it, I did send you an abstract for the Hamsai workshop. I hope that's okay. And so that's all I have. Back to Ned.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Dan in for XWE. Go ahead, Dan.
Good evening, Dave, and hello, everyone. I worked a little bit with Raspberry Pi 4, got it up and running with LinHPSDR. It actually runs better, in my opinion, subjectively, than the Odroid. So I think we got this done just in time for Raspberry Pi to come out with a new version, which I'll have to see if I can't get a copy of one of them. It's now version 1.2. I think from what I've read, the two changes they made were one to the USB-C port, which was struggling a little bit on any type of power supply other than the official Raspberry Pi 4 power supply. And I think there also were some SD card issues with it that have been and older versions, which have been rectified in version 1.2. So one thing I would like to discuss this evening a little bit is what we're going to end up doing at Dayton. I think I'm actually going to be going to Dayton this year. I wasn't planning on doing it, but things have changed and have some family stuff that's going on that weekend, and it would be good to kill two birds with one stone, so I think I may end up heading north. Anyway, back to you, Dave.
Fine business. And that brings us to the end of the... Oh, who jumped in there? That's Scotty again. So he's already talked, so I'm not going to go back to the Scotty 10.0. So we're open for general discussion.
Well, going back to my previous comments, I was kind of curious if anybody's formulated any plans on what we're planning to do at Dayton.
Well, this is Nathaniel here. I know on the ham size side of things, we're planning on having a booth. I think we're going to try and have more posters at the booth this year. We have a forum on Saturday morning, and I'm also giving a couple talks at the Contest University.
Okay, thanks, Nathaniel. Well, Scotty,
disconnected from your channel.
Oh, maybe Scotty disappeared again there. Scotty, what are the Tapper plans for Dayton?
Okay, let's see if this works. You're not getting
User
it.
Joined your channel.
Is this coming through okay, Dave?
Yes, you're coming through fine with the 101, but not. I haven't seen you try the 10.
Yeah, I was playing with around with it while I was listening, but it's now I hear myself coming back. So stand by just one second.
User disconnected from your channel.
Too much echo going on. Okay, now I'm back and I can talk again.
Well, there was a question for you.
Yeah, Scotty, what Dan was asking what everyone's plans at Dayton are, and Nathaniel talked about HamSci. And what are the Tapper plans at Dayton?
Well, the Tapper plans are going to be the usual three booths in Building 5. As far as I know, so far I think we've made the reservations already. And for the forum, I have two speakers now. I'm still looking for one more speaker for the Tapper forum. I've got Bruce Perrins talking about a VHF UHF handheld radio, new thing he's working on, and I've got John Westmoreland is going to talk about his open HPSDR GPSDO. So those are the two that I have so far. Also invited John to come hang out at the booth. And I invited some other people too, but I can't remember all of them. But everyone's welcome. And we'll be right next to the Hack RF booth and see what else will we have going on. Oh, and then the Tapper AMSAT dinner on Friday night is promising to be really good if we could pull it off. It's rumored to be at the Air Force Museum again. So if you like the Air Force Museum, you can come eat dinner, and then you get a couple hours to tour around the Air Force Museum and look at everything. And believe me, a couple hours is not anywhere near long enough to see the whole place, but it's a really cool place to hang out. And you can spend a lot of time there, as much as they'll let you after dinner, and not get through it all.
Yeah, you need 2 days to see the whole thing.
So as far as anything else going on, I think we'll just be having conferences and all that. I don't know if... I may be giving a talk over at your group, Nathaniel, if you have any space left. Are you coordinating that, or is Ward doing that?
I'm coordinating that, and we'll probably have you give a talk. I have to work it out, though. I asked Hamvention if I could turn in our schedule after the HamSci workshop, because that way I can see what talks and things were good at the HamSci workshop, and then use that as an to figure out what we want to present at Hamvention.
But you're coordinating the HamSci workshop, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so then what doesn't fit there? Well, you'll fit into the local booth talks on. Well, you'll have them on Friday and Saturday, right?
Yeah. So I think we're not going to do booth talks this year because it's always so noisy. I think what I'm going to encourage people to do is try and get a lot of posters, people to put together scientific posters and hang those up, and then people can come spend some time standing by their posters. I think that might work a little bit better with the type of traffic we have.
Yeah,
this
maybe
might
hang
be the first poster session at Dayton.
Well, we have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Scotty.
Yeah, sorry, Bill. I just said if we put them toward the back, then you might actually be able to hear what the people are saying.
Yeah, it's been hard with the last couple of years. There's just so much traffic, and there's that robot area right across from us that even this past year we had the microphone system. But it was just, I'm not convinced that it was really effective.
Yeah, and I tried lobbying them for more time, and it's just not effective because the Tapper used to be an hour and 45 minutes, and it's down to 1 hour now. So, and they don't seem to be interested in giving us any more time. So I just have to make do with what we get. And do you get over an hour, or do you get an hour?
I think we got an hour and 15 this year.
Yeah, and really, they put 15 minutes of time in between the sessions, which is really too much extra, because I know that toward the last 5 minutes of our presentation is when people come in and swap chairs. So I think they could just leave. In previous years, they left no time in between them. So we would right up to 10:45, and we would get that extra time. And now they're chopping 15 minutes out and saying, no, that's no man's land. That's a room changeover time.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's not as good.
Yeah, so what I've been doing is kind of on the sly. I've been kind of assigning myself the first 10 minutes of that slot and just using it up anyway. And we just run over, but we're still in early enough that the next people can swap the spectators out.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, you don't need that much time. You don't want it to run right over, but you definitely don't need that much time in between sessions.
Yeah, because what happens is everybody just stands up and starts gabbing, and you get a big networking fest, and then no presentations get made.
Yeah, and you want to keep those presentations going.
Yeah, so I kind of liked it before the other way, or the way Hamcation does it, where they have full 1 hour slots, and then they have 15 minutes in between, and they don't schedule sessions right at the beginning. That's another thing they did at Hamvention, is they moved the start time from 9 o'clock to 9:15 to give people a chance to get from the gate to their presentations they want to see before they start.
Yeah, which is also really nice. So question for you, do you have any suggestions for the HamSci booth?
For the booth itself? Well, I thought that if you could manage to put a curtain perpendicular to the door and kind of make a hallway for people to walk through, and you probably are going to have to put tables up in right inside it, because otherwise you won't, the people will just push through the curtain. But I think that might be a way to kind of keep the foot traffic in the hallway and out of your booth, so that if you wanted to actually have a presentation in the back, I think you could do it.
Okay, that's something to keep in mind. I know, I think this year, so like in the past, we've split the space with Ham Radio 2.0 and Ward Silver's group. And Yasmi, Ward Silver, they've paid for our booth. So we're going to do that again this year, except I think we're getting a more even split between the space. So we are going to be restructuring things a little bit.
But you get that whole side of the entry hall opposite the robot guys, right?
That's right.
So that's like four booth spaces?
I guess so. As I said, though, we share it with the Ham Radio 2.0. So like, there's a little section that's been the Ham Sci booth. And then there was a spot that we were doing the talks. And that the talk time was split between us and between the Ham Radio 2.0 group. And so now I think this year we're going to split the whole space a little bit more evenly between the two. So I think HamSci is essentially going to get about two booth spaces worth of space.
Yeah, so I noticed that behind the, see if I can get this right, if you come in the door from the outside and you go to the far left corner, it seemed like you had like a curtain around there, and that was kind of like a reserved space for everybody to park all their stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Unfortunately, that's the best area for the speakers to be, because they're furthest away from the door. So I don't know if you could put some tables up or something and put the storage area back toward the door and use it as a buffer area.
Yeah, that's an idea. I'll have to, I know Ward just sent out a few emails about it, so I'll have to take a look at what the layout plan is for this year.
Yeah, because I think if you put the speaker in that back corner there where the gear was stored, and with the judicious application of a screen curtain, you could make it really kind of quiet back in there. I mean, quiet enough with a speaker and a microphone and a speaker, I think it would work.
Yeah. But as I said, I think we're going to try doing the poster session type of thing this year. I know in the past I've hung up a couple posters. Like I have a poster for the solar eclipse QSO party results, And when I had that up, I had quite a bit of traffic of people just looking at that. And so I thought that was pretty effective.
Yeah, okay. Well, it'd be something to try. Also, if you ever want any AV stuff, please ask Tapper, because George has a full outfit of that stuff, and he would be happy to help out if you needed microphones or speakers or amps or anything like that. He brings them all to Hamvention because he lives in Michigan, so he just drives down.
Oh, that would be great. That would be, yeah, I'll have to keep that in mind. Will you, or do you think you would be able to have some hardware or demo stuff for the personal space weather station that we might be able to show at the HamSci booth too?
I'm really hoping that I will have at least an RF module. I know that doesn't really do a lot for you because you don't have a data engine, but I'm going to try to do a data engine, but I just don't know if I'm going to be able to have one ready by Hamvention. RF module, Tom, jump in if you think I'm off base, but I think we can easily have one by May.
Yeah, that's a little out of my control. That's got to be, parts have to be procured and the module has to be assembled. And so I would think you're probably in a better position to say what availability is.
Yeah, and the gating item is whether we accept the layout. So the gating item is going to be getting the DE placement. So once we get that and we determine that, yes, they will fit together, because we'll have 3D CAD models of the three boards, and we can plug them together virtually on the computer to make sure nothing interferes, everything fits. We'll actually be able to screw them down, and we'll have a way to mount the whole assembly. So once we get to that point, then we can really much go ahead independently on the boards. And really, once we have the Gerbers, it takes 2 weeks to get the boards fabbed. It takes another 2 weeks to get them built. For a demo, for a show and tell of hardware, you don't even need to have it debugged. You can just show the raw board. So at the worst case, we have that. And actually, until we get a data engine, you're not going to be able to debug it anyway.
Yeah, I would have guessed that getting the parts would have been the long pole.
Well, we tried pretty hard to buy parts that are all available. And actually, it turns out, you're going to love this, Tom. You know the part that we're having trouble with? It's the GBLC03C.
Oh, I understand that. Well, we can go into debug and test without that part.
We don't have to, because that's the same part we use on the IQ2, and we have a reel of them in stock.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you're able to get the big ASICs and dual A to D converter and all that stuff?
Yep. Nona's been through the parts list, got it all priced, got it all sourced. Nothing out of the ordinary. So easily in 2 weeks, we can have all the parts in stock once we determine how many we're going to build.
Okay. So the key question is, did you faint and fall over when you saw the price list?
Yeah, kind of, because it comes in higher than the data engine. I don't remember the exact number, but it's around $140 for BOM cost because of that A to D.
Yeah, that was the cheapest dual I could find that had decent performance.
Yep. So, it is what it is, and you need that performance, then we're going to have to pay for it. But we're going to have to, and again, this is just the first pass, and this is building onesies. So when we go to build a lot of them, it's going to get a lot cheaper.
Okay. Well, hey, first things first, if you can get the parts and you can actually build them, that's a really good start.
Yeah, and I would look for the BOM cost to be well under $100, well, at least under $100 in quantity, if we can get the quantity up to say 500.
Okay, traditional problem. If you can sell a gazillion of them, you can get the cost down, but no one will buy them until the cost is down, so you can't build very many.
Yeah, so I guess it doesn't take much of a rocket scientist to multiply 500 times 100 to come up with the $50,000 amount.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to work that whole issue separately. I am not going to be in Dayton. I priced out flights, and I exceed the BOM cost of the receiver by many, many orders of magnitude.
Okay. Well, that's too bad. I was going to say, maybe if you could fly into St. Louis, I'll drive over with you, because my brother lives there. So, and he has, his kids are all grown. They're out of the house. So that, that would help any, that would work.
Yeah.
Columbus is really a much better destination.
Yeah. Round trip economy to Dayton was over $3,000.
Say what?
That's crazy.
No, yeah. That's Dayton. That's the problem is Dayton.
Okay. Yeah. It was, yeah, and it would take 2 days in each direction to do it.
And Tom is flying from Medford, right?
Yep.
Medford's like a Dayton at the other end.
Yeah, so you know, if I got a rental car and I drove to Seattle, flew to Cleveland and then got a rental car and drove to Dayton, it'd be a lot cheaper and it'd be about the same number of hours.
Well, you're just going to have to move. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what everybody tells me, mostly the neighbors.
Yeah, okay. After they see your tower, right?
Something like that.
After the 160-meter CW contest, maybe.
Yeah, worked all telephone handsets.
That's what I'm talking about.
So, Tom, did anybody ask you about the two hula hoops in your backyard?
Yes, actually, I've gotten a number of inquiries. I showed it off at a club meeting and demoed it for folks, and there were a lot of questions. It's real amazing. We set it up to listen to WWV on 10 megahertz and had the antenna inside the building and walked it out the door 10 feet from the building and put it on a tree stump 3 feet high. And the signal stayed the same and the noise level dropped about 7S units.
Wow. I was curious about that and essentially how hard they were to build. And it's always the capacitors in those that are expensive, right? That's if you want to transmit. So I guess on receive, it didn't matter, right?
Yeah, no capacitors. On receive, it's a broadband antenna. There's a common misconception that small loops are narrow band. The antenna itself is actually quite broadband. What's narrow band is when you want to transmit, you need a ridiculously high Q matching network, and that's where the narrow bandwidth comes from.
Very good. You can tell I've been reading some of those papers recently.
Yeah. It's I normally, if I give a presentation on small shielded receive loops, I almost always have to explain that the antenna itself is in fact not narrow band at all. The one that I built in the picture there goes from about 250 kilohertz up to about 20 megahertz or so without any tuning.
User disconnected from your channel.
Very good. And by the way, I did track down PDFs of all the papers that are on that list, but unfortunately, some of them have
user joined your channel.
Publication restrictions. So I guess we can figure out a way to share those one way or another, but I can't just post them uniquely on the web.
Okay. Yeah. The I found I had a copy already. I'd gotten the Dubis magazine that had Phil Herman's chirp article in it, and it's somewhere around here. I've got to go dig it up.
Very good.
Are we at a point where we can branch off onto a software discussion?
Please.
Okay. Question. How do you copy?
Roger. Go ahead.
Okay. You and I talked about the first step in the local host to DE communication would be the discovery, which creates a virtual channel between the two of them. Then we use that channel, and I'm going to send a create channel request to the data engine. Now, that is going to it will create another virtual channel, communication channel, I should say. Now, using that configuration channel that I've just created, I can send a creation command to set the channels of the receiver, that is the data engine, so that it can know the center frequency and bandwidth or data rate of each sample rate of each of the channels it's going to run. But I'm just wondering, do I have to create a listener port on the small board computer for the configuration virtual channel, or is that kind of a one way? I guess if the data engine is going to send an ACK or a NEC, is that going to come back on the command channel or the config channel when I go to do a create channel?
Okay, so first when you do a discovery, you're going to create a configuration channel, right? So you're going to have that initial channel, that pipe between the data engine and the single board computer. We're going to call that the configuration channel. It's going to be used to create all the other channels and discontinue all the other channels. And it's going to have to be bidirectional because, yes, the ACKs and NACs are going to come back on that same channel. Then you use that to create, and I believe we talked about creating a command channel and a data stream channel pair. You create a pair of channels at once using the configuration channel to create them or to discontinue their use when you're done with them. Is that what you recollect?
Well, your impression of it is kind of reversed from what I had imagined. I thought when we do the discovery, that creates a command channel. Then we can do it the other way. It's just a question. It's kind of what you call it. Let's just go with that for a minute. So the first thing that we create is a pair of channels. It's a virtual channel. We're going to call that the configuration channel. Now, is that the channel you want me to use to send the list of frequencies and rates, or does that come on the command channel? That's later. I mean, originally I thought the first channel pair that would be created would be the command channel. From that, I can create the other channels, including a configuration channel and the data channel. And I'm just wondering if I need to have a listener on this SBC for when I send a configuration. Is the ACK for that going to come back on the command channel or on the configuration channel? What makes the most sense?
I think coming back on the configuration channel. And okay, I see where you're going. So the initial channel we'll call the command channel, and we use that to set all of that's a pipe between the data engine and the single board computer. It's used to create command and data channel pairs. It's also used to configure, which is why I called it the configuration channel. But it's used to set up all the unique hardware of the data engine itself. So you have things that are, like hardware components that aren't really, they don't get assigned to a specific data channel until you create that data channel, or like selecting antennas and things like that. You send them over the command channel. All that stuff goes over the command channel, including the creation, deletion of configuration data pairs.
All right. So the first thing we create is the command channel pair. I'm clear on that. Now, along that, across that command channel, I send a channel creation request to the data engine, and that is going to the data engine will start listening on another port for configuration information at that point. The data engine's got to tell me what that port is. Now, is that port going to be told back to me via the command channel, or do I have to have a listener just for configuration reply?
Well, that'll come back to you on the command channel as part of the ACK. So you'll say that you need to create a configuration channel, and he will come back and either say, I can't do it in ACK, or he'll say, ACK, here's the port number I'm listening on.
Okay, so what that tells me is that I do not need to have a listener port on the SBC for configuration reply, because that data is going to come back to me via the command channel. Does that sound right to you?
No, because once the configuration channel is established, then everything that has to do with the associated data channel, like the center frequency, the sample rate and all that, that's going to be set up on the configuration channel, because that configuration channel is paired with that data channel, and it controls the configuration of that data channel.
Right. I'm with you there, but you're saying, okay, so you once we have a configuration and data channel pair, you don't want to use the command channel anymore. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. You would only use the command channel in that case for setting hardware-specific things on the data engine that are not specifically paired up with the data channel. Like I said, like picking an antenna or turning LEDs on or something like that.
All right. So under that scenario, when I do the create channel command, I'm going to tell the data engine what port I'm going to listen on for configuration replies. I suppose I could also tell it what port I'm going to listen on for data. So I could So there would really be a couple of ports being passed at that point when we do that channel creation.
Yeah, I mean, my original thought was that you would create the data channel on the configuration channel, but since we had agreed kind of to create them in pairs, I think getting two listening ports on each end would work.
Well, there'll be actually three listening ports on each end. One to hear commands and replies to commands, one to receive configuration and replies from that, and another for data. So there'll be three listening ports on the DE and three listening ports on the local host, with the proviso that we won't be sending data from the local host to the DE in this version, because that would be microphone data.
Okay, well, but the possibility exists to do it, and then in future versions. And then the other possibility also exists for the command channel to establish additional configuration data channel pairs to send other virtual data over if you want to send them either to different IP addresses or different ports.
Right. Yeah. All right. So does that kind of encapsulate what we had discussed at Orlando, I think. Now, do you already have this written down? I mean, there was that white paper you showed me had page after page after page of discussion, but I never remember seeing that there was a clear process chart showing this. If there is, send it to me, but if not, let me try this. Let me put this down in black and white on a single page to show the primary case, and then get you to confirm it.
Okay, yeah, so I have some of it written down, but most of it is not. So let me chop out the pieces that are irrelevant, that are left over from the protocol 2 from HPSDR. I keep telling you I'm going to send you this, and I keep forgetting to do it. So let me send that to you, and then see if you could figure out the best way to create some kind of bubble chart or flow chart or some way that we can put this down in an easy-to-follow graphical representation.
Yeah, I already have a draft of that. I just have to modify it a little bit to reflect what we've just talked about. But I do have that. And let me tell you what, let me request this. Why don't you take a look and do what you're talking about doing and send that to me. At the same time, I will do this one-page chart that I have in mind, and I'll send that to you, and then we can kind of reconcile them after that.
Okay, yeah, sounds good. Because I kind of wrote down the scenario in text, but it's really hard to follow. So some graphical thing, if we could come up with a way to represent it, it might be pretty slick looking.
Yeah, I have a real problem with trying to explain something like that textually. It leads to a verbal diarrhea where there's all this discussion about why it's important to do this and why we did that, and which is completely irrelevant. What's important is that we illustrate how the thing is going to work in a digestible form. So I will take a shot at that and get you something by COB tomorrow. And if you can just, I know you're extremely busy, if you can just find out of that white paper what you think I need to have to flesh that out, that would be most helpful.
Okay, yeah, I can do that. Because mostly it's deleting things, which is I was reluctant to do, but at some point you got to just take the hatchet to it and get rid of the stuff that's irrelevant, like you said, the verbal diarrhea, and get rid of that and condense it down to something easy to understand.
Yeah, I mean, a spec like this, if it goes to more than a page or two, you're missing something.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, the Protocol 3 spec is like 37 pages, and I'm just going like, oh, how am I going to, I don't want to take all this information out, but really the information is mostly not usable in the document that we're going to create. And what I was trying to do was to break it like into three sections. So you have the discovery, you have the command channel, and basically all that's going to happen on the command channel is you're going to be able to program the board, you're going to be able to do a discovery, you're going to be able to create data channels and configuration channels, and you're going to be able to talk to specific hardware on the board, and that's it. That's all that the command channel is used for. Everything else happens on the configuration and data channel and data stream pairs.
All right, so let me think about, once I have created a pair, a configuration pair and a data pair of channels, of ports, I should say. So that's kind of two channels at which go together. I suppose if I send along that configuration channel, say a list of the frequencies and data rates, that the system is going to ACK that or NACK it. So assuming it, we get the data engine says ACK, okay, I can do that. Is there, do you want there to be a separate command to say, okay, now you've got the configuration, start collecting data and reporting it? You want a separate command for that, or do you want to do that immediately as soon as you get the list of configuration of, you know, the whatever channel is going to be, list of frequencies and everything?
I think you need to make it separate, because until you actually request the configuration on the configuration channel, you're not going to know whether the data engine can do it or not. So you have to get the ACK back to say, yep, I can do that kind of stream. And then you can tell them, okay, start transferring the data.
Scotty, is there more than one data channel, or is it a data channel per receiver, or one data channel for all receivers?
Well, this gets to a gnarly question, because we need 8 virtual receivers or 4 virtual receivers. Now, one of the ways to get that is one data stream that has the 4 IQ streams buried in it, or you can request 4 streams, each that has just one receiver IQ pair buried in it. And I think we'll be able to support either of those, because we're going to have lots of different format packets of IQ data, and it may be I0, I1, Q1, I2, you know what I'm saying, interleaved like that, or it may be just IQ, 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 and then if you want another receiver, then you open up a new stream, you open up a new configuration channel and a new data stream to be the next virtual receiver. So you could have really 8 streams coming into 8 different pairs of ports, or you could interleave all the data and get it in on one stream.
Okay, so
well, let me just throw this out there. due to limitations in digital RF, we need, at least for this version, to use the interleaved approach, because that's the only way you're going to get it into a digital RF file.
Okay, that's fine, because what I had envisioned was that on the configuration channel, you're going to tell the data engine what kind of format you want, and we're going to define a whole bunch of different formats, and one of them will be just a single channel. One will be interleaved, and it could be interleaved in order to make it easy to format it into HDF5 format. And we'll use those formats in the Personal Space Weather Station. But for instance, if we're going to run HDSDR, we probably won't be able to interleave, because it won't understand that.
I would like to make one caution here. The limited resource is the FPGA programmers, and we have a lot more Linux programmers. We should make the data engine FPGA code as simple and straightforward as possible, and then use the other side to break it apart.
Yeah, as long as we can keep up. So, because I want the FPGA to be able to do the high speed stuff. And so, and I think the idea is we're going to come up with, like, if you look at protocol 2, I believe that they interleave the streams, if I'm not mistaken. So when you add virtual radios, if you say I want 4 streams, four virtual radios, you get them interleaved. Do you remember if that's true, Dave?
Yeah, I believe that's true.
So in order to send to PowerSDR, we're going to have to do it that way. But I would like to be able to put the facility in the FPGA code to be able to support multiple different ones, or use different ones for different FPGA loads. And likely we'll start off with supporting only like 1 or 2 formats, and that'll be it. But if we make the protocol sufficient to support the other formats, then when we get to the point where we need to do something different, we have the flexibility to do that.
Well, I have looked at the code in OpenHPSDR, and it would not be difficult to deal with 2 interleaved channels. I think you might have mentioned that maybe already what they're doing. More than that, and I, you might have to discard some of the data because I don't know if OpenHPSDR can really support more than 2 receivers at the same time.
Well, when you're making HDF5 files, are you going to make a different file for each virtual receiver, or the virtual receivers all going to be data all included in one HDF5 file?
Well, we're going to run into some limitations in what digital RF can do. But what it looks like to me is you're able to create one file at a time, and that file can have as many channels in it as you want. So that is, does that answer the question?
I think so. So what you're saying is then you want to interleave all the data for however many receivers you have all into one stream.
If you're going to output this as digital RF, now, if you're going to do something else with it, the answer could be different. Like the way we've talked about the fire hose mode, and we've talked about what we're going to do with the copying FT8 data, and we don't have to do it the same way. I'm just telling you, for the ring buffer mode, we have to kind of go by what digital RF really allows, because there's some things it does automatically that if you step outside that, you're really getting into a swamp.
Yeah. But I hear what Dave's saying too, is that we can't have an infinite number of variants because we don't have an infinite number of FPGA programmers. But like I said, I'd like to make something that is common that we can put in all of these, like separate streams and interleave streams. I think we can do both of those in the FPGA and just put them both in there. And then the software can pick whatever it wants by deciding what kind of stream it wants from the data engine.
For example, Scotty, the DFC kind of just samples as much spectrum as you can handle and then lets the secondary computer resample that at wherever it wants. That's again something else that would have little chunks sampled by the FPGA, and then you just have lots of those streams.
But part of the problem with that is that doesn't he throw out all of the other software layers and just blast data out over the port, which means that you can't really have to and from port addresses and all that, because he doesn't do any of that.
Yeah, that's the DFC. Well, they actually do it from the DFC computing, the CUDA cores, to whatever's displaying it. Is kind of like what you're talking about building between your data engine and the single board computer.
Okay, but he does that protocol in software, right?
Yes.
So the problem is, if we wanted to have the configuration channel and the command channel and the ports listing and all that, then we really can't do DFC type of format, because that takes over the entire port, right?
Yeah, they were running just about everything they could get out of a 1 gigahertz. Port.
And we could do something similar, but we wouldn't get quite as much, because we'd have to have framing and we'd have to have, you know, the preambles and the headers and all that. So we wouldn't get quite as much, because he doesn't use any headers at all. He just uses the Ethernet chips to send as much data as you can, because it's point to point. It's not routed. There's no addresses. It's just spewing out bucketfuls of data and the other guy catches it.
Well, this sounds exactly like the fire hose mode.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be possible to put the system into that mode if you've got that special case where you've got a supercomputer on the same wire as the data engine.
And the NVIDIA boards will handle that.
Except that how are you going to mix that in with the command and configuration channels that are running on the same Ethernet network?
Yeah. What I'm saying is there are different ways of going about the same problem. And there are advantages and disadvantages where you put a lot of the complicated code. And I'm suggesting that we'd like to, I suggest that the FPGA code be straightforward and very concise and not a lot of options. And you put those things places where it's easier to program it.
Well, and that's good as long as the thing that's going to program it has enough horsepower to keep up. But when you run out of horsepower on a single board computer, then it makes more sense to put the horsepower where the need where the power is, so to speak. And I have no problem with, we could make an FPGA image that that would do firehose mode, that would do DFC. And it wouldn't support any of this protocol we've been talking about. It would do Phil's DFC protocol, and that would just be a different FPGA load. But, and maybe when we get to integrating NVIDIA boards, that's what we want to do. But I think for this case, we want something a little bit more complex, but nailed down so that we know exactly what we have to do.
Well, and this is one thing that I was asking. I asked Dolores today, what frequencies and how much bandwidth do ionospheric astronomers pay attention to? And she was mentioning that there's an awful lot of interest at very low HF.
What, you mean like 3 megahertz to 5 megahertz?
Well, basically, not that, well, that low, but a lot of the 100 hertz and that kind of stuff.
There's a lot of interest in VLF activity.
Yes. So, what I'm still never sure about in all our discussions is what pieces of the spectrum are we most interested in? And what I always get back is everything.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I mean, everyone has their own pet projects. Like, I really like HF, so I spend all of my time there. But there are people who are all about sporadic E. And yeah, there's a whole community of people that do VLF. So you're right, it is everything. And a lot of it just comes down to what is the interest of the particular person who's really working on it.
Well, bear in mind that we have to design something here that we can actually accomplish the work of building it and selling it. I figure, let's say if we have the limitation, our lowest frequency that our device is going to look for is 100 kilohertz. It's certainly possible, and a lot of people do this, to build an adapter that goes in front of it, like a transverter or something, to get, if you want to get VLF, you just upconvert it. You can do that. Bear in mind that, you know, we're not necessarily designing the final version of this at the moment, too. What we're designing is phase one.
And it's supposed to be modular. So, I mean, if someone wants to do VLF stuff in the future, they could design a VLF module that would attach to the thing. But I think we should put our main focus on the HF like we've been doing so far.
Yeah, so you just replace the RF module with the VLF module. Because I think, Tom, since we're transformer coupled, how far down can we go? 500 kilohertz? 100 kilohertz?
Well, right now there's, I think we can get down to about the 100 kilohertz range, but I don't know what the noise figure is going to be down there. The transformers are rated. Some of them are rated to 500 kilohertz. Some of the couplings rated down to 100 kilohertz. So I suspect it'll be a gradual fall off in performance as you go down.
Yeah, I know on our receiver and transmitter, we use the same transformers, and we can do 100 kilohertz at slightly reduced performance. The transmitter will not work below 200 kilohertz because of the transformers. No matter how you change the coupling or how you do it, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, that's generally because their transmitters are pretty low impedance, and so the transformers are difficult. I would expect, as you say, that as you get down towards 100 kilohertz, the noise figure will degrade, and in that case, you may need a preamplifier or something.
But we also have a lot more atmospheric noise down there too, don't we?
Yeah, so the question is, do you need a low noise figure at 100 kilohertz? And that's a separate answer. Because the antenna, the antenna will be physically very small at 100 kilohertz, and so it's not going to be a very sensitive antenna, but the universe is a noisy place down there, so there's a lot of variables.
Yeah, so I guess the modularity covers that issue if we have to do that. And I hear you, Dave. I'm worried enough as it is about FPGA code, but like I said, I got another insane recruit up my sleeve, so I go meet him out in Orlando at the end of this week. So believe me, there'll be lots of discussion on how he could help with this project.
I was wondering if there was any feedback from your last time you met him, or maybe you didn't meet him last time.
No, ironically enough, I met him, and he's the one that got me a new job in Orlando. So he's feeding me work, commercial work,
And what my purpose was to recruit him for volunteer work.
Well, maybe you can mix.
I'm sure we can mix. This is a short-term project anyway that I can do remotely, and he's going to be working on. So we'll whip this out in a couple, 3 months, and then he won't have anything to do, and he'll be working on our project, right?
That's right. We get him involved.
Of course, it'll be his project too, because he was already excited about it, because he actually found out about it through a guy who read my QEX article and was turned onto it that way. And so he came down to Hamcation and was all excited about meeting me. And so we got together and had dinner, and it was good. This is going to be a good 3 days that I'm going to get to spend with him and chat up the project and work with him and see just how qualified he really is. He sounds really good. Sounds like he knows what he's talking about. So I'm excited.
Well, it sounds good. I followed your article till about the last page or two, and then I got confused.
Sounds like the place I got confused writing it.
User disconnected from your channel.
Anyway, of course you can do any of this stuff on each of the platforms, but the effort per the effort to production in some platforms is lower than or higher than other platforms, and that's all I'm wanting to point out.
Yeah, well, keep pointing it out, because we shouldn't forget that, because we could easily design a great piece of hardware and then never make it do anything useful.
Yep. And it's all a learning process, and there are lots of things that we can do. And I'm amazed at what we've already accomplished through the last 10 or 12 years. So it's a wonderful process, and a bunch of people on this list have an awful lot of experience.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to getting something that actually can receive something after all this effort, after 2 years. And then throw in the networking stuff. It's going to be totally amazing.
I think it is good for you and Bill, and I will try to be more diligent at reviewing it, but it's very important to write that down, the protocols, and then once we're happy with them, kind of stick to them.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of derelict.
User joined your channel.
Without, because really, I tell my customers this in the commercial world. It's like, what I produce for you is paper. I produce written stuff. I produce the blueprint for you to make thousands of them. But producing one, that doesn't really count if I can't tell you how to make all of them, make hundreds of them.
Yep. So we're on the way, but there's little decisions. And I know from the other project, there are things that made sense at the beginning, and later we go, why in the world did we do that?
Yeah, and I hope we've ironed a lot of those out after 18 months of massaging the specs and evolving the unit. It certainly looks a lot different than it did in Albuquerque in 2018.
Yes.
And here Nathaniel's putting, well, we got to be ready for the 2023 eclipse. I'm going like, ah, yeah, well, that's so far away. There's no way we won't be ready. Well, here it is 2020 now, and it's looming upon us.
Time goes fast.
Yeah, well, we were going to be ready with demo units in Orlando and didn't make that.
Yeah, well, it's other things do intervene sometimes, but I think we are making good progress, and we can just get past the hump here. We'll have I'm really looking forward to be done with the hardware and start working on FPGA code, because that's where I really enjoy myself.
Well, that's good. And if you have somebody else helping, that's going to be great too.
Yeah, so I kind of agree with Bill's approach here. He's been looking at always what does the initial implementation look like, and let's all focus on that initial implementation. And then once we see what works and how it works, we can add in all the other cool stuff.
Yeah, as long as you keep the format open enough that it's extensible, and I think we've done that. So if especially with Bill, I mean, you put this up, right, Dave? The video of Bill's stuff, and I mean, I talked a little bit, but Bill had the demo of the software at Hamcation, and there's a video up on the main page of that. So for anyone who hasn't seen that,
it's up on the Tangerine page. It's the way Jason made it was one video together. I can go in there and make a link to Bill's part, and basically I just have to put a timestamp in the call and it'll start where Bill's starts. But if you watch the second video on the first page of the Tangerine page, it goes through Scotty and then it goes right over into Bill's talk.
Yeah, if that wouldn't be too hard, that would be awesome to have a link directly into Bill's half.
Yep, all I have to do is make a thumbnail for him showing Bill's pretty face.
Very good. And then but Bill's demo was very impressive with Odroid emulating a data engine when we don't have any hardware and talking to another Odroid, which is emulating, well, it is the local host. And he had a cool web page up there that you could steer things and you could enter call signs and drop down boxes and everything.
Yep. So I don't know. Jason has never put, this is about DCC, but Jason has never put up the Satnog stuff at DCC, so I assume he recorded it, so at some time it should show up.
Yeah, the Sunday seminar, I was there, he did record it.
So that's the only bit of video that I think we don't have.
Okay, well, I wish I'd remember to ask him about that when I saw him at Hamcation, 2 weeks ago, but a quick email would be in order, I guess.
He's busy with doing all kinds of different things, and so, and I think what he does is he jumps from one project to the other so that people that don't like just one thing, they don't get bored with him.
Yeah, and he has to keep new content coming to keep people interested.
So I can understand it, but I thought I'd mention that. Well, we are at an hour, if that's an issue.
Yeah, I have to get going here too, and I'm sure everyone else is busy and has to get going. But I would like to get with you, Dave, a little bit later on, maybe early next month, and maybe start doing some programming algorithms for the IQ2, something we could import directly, kind of get a jump on the FPGA code. Because, by the way, and part of the reason the data engine is so slow is I'm actually building the FPGA project at the same time to make sure that the way I connect it up will actually work. So it slows things down a bit, but it gives you the certainty that when you actually get the hardware, that you can actually configure the FPGA the way it's connected up.
Now, are you going to build it like the A9 where it has a built-in programmer?
Yes, that's the idea. And I want to be able to talk to your programmer or a variant of it and as early on as we can, because the easier we make it for people to upgrade, in fact, here's the problem is that the guy from the Radio Joke project, he may listen to this
user
later.
User disconnected from your channel.
He bought an IQ2 and we're having trouble setting it to an IP address because we don't have the tools to program the user flash block in the IQ2 like we had in the B radio. So
user joined your channel.
It's an issue here, and I think I'd like to incorporate it into the IQ2 as well, and that way we make it easy so you don't have to download 6 gigabytes worth of tools just to program a user flash block and set your IP address.
Yes, I completely agree. And I have a working IQ2 thanks to you, so we can test it that as well.
Okay, well, I can send you code and you can program it in, right? So we can test both sides of the code, your side, my side.
So I'm doing some things with Phil Harmon, and right now I'm up to 17.1, and I suppose I should download the 19.1 Cortis.
Don't do it.
Don't do it? What should I stay at?
The Linux version, the Windows version is at 18.1, and there's no newer versions. The Linux versions that they've come out with, like 19.1, 19.2, 19.3, and 19.4, and from my partner Charlie, who is a Linux fanatic, he says they don't work. They've upgraded them so fast they haven't thoroughly tested them. So really, if you're on Windows, 18.1 is the best one, and I believe you're going to want to use 18.1 on Linux also.
Thank you. That, looking at all those things, I was trying to figure out which one to use, and I have one Windows computer that doesn't belong to me, and everything else is Linux.
Yeah, so But you can use 18.1 under Linux. I think that works reasonably well. Charlie was trying to do something that was some mundane, easy-to-do thing, and it just wouldn't work. And he was just astounded that they would miss something so basic in the he was trying to use 19.3 or 19.4 under Linux, and it just wouldn't do some basic thing. So, yeah, the Windows version runs fine. I run under Windows, so, I run under both, but most of the development I do under Windows.
Well, I did load that other one on my one Windows machine just to see it. What I find out is the Linux is fine if you're used to it. It's a little confusing getting it installed right. And having seen it in Windows first helps you understand what you're trying to get to on the Linux side.
Yeah, but once you get installed and you get into the graphical interface, then it's pretty much the same. So doesn't matter. So, but like you said, getting it installed and configured is you have to deal with that. And I mean, ideally, the goal that I have is I don't want to have to run any of the Intel Altera tools to program the part. I want to have a bootloader built into the FPGA, and I want to have your software running on the PC, and they talk to each other, and they do all the programming and updates.
Yeah, and I'm learning a huge amount on the programming language that I'm using on the language that I'm using is Go, and Go runs Mac, Windows, Linux. It's compatible across the whole set, so it's quite easy to make a very portable programmer from our point of view.
Okay, well, that's good. That'd be awesome. And then it runs that end runs on any machine you've got and talks to the bootloader. So, okay, cool. Hey, I have to run. So, thanks a lot, Dave, for running everything in the future of programmer.
And I am gonna. You did hear about the little web change. I had that, and I was gonna do it today, but my fan belt in our car broke, and I was driving down the road, and all of a sudden I had no power steering, and it was fun.
Ooh, that's exciting.
So I was taking care of that today.
It works great as long as you don't have to turn.
Well, or you have big muscles.
Yeah, really. Okay,
anyways,
well,
73 to everybody.
73 there.
All right, 73, we'll be in touch.
73, good evening, everyone.
73.
User disconnected from
user
your
disconnected from your channel.
Hey Dan, maybe we can chat when I get over in Florida. I got